May it please the court. The way I see it, procedure-wise, this court has three options for deciding how to treat the statement in lieu and the pro se amended motion that were filed in the present case. And I expect to talk about all three of them. You can first do what I am primarily advocating and hold that if an attorney has not filed an amended motion or a statement in lieu by the 60-day deadline or gotten an extension, that attorney has abandoned the client. Second, in the alternative, you can hold that if an attorney files a statement in lieu after the deadline, if a movement files a pro se amended motion within 10 days, the court should treat it as timely. Or third, you could do as the state advocates and hold that there is no deadline for filing a statement in lieu, so no abandonment has taken place when such a statement is filed after the deadline for an amended motion, and any pro se amended motion filed after that statement in lieu is a nullity and should be rejected. As to whether a deadline for filing an amended motion, I'd like to begin by discussing what the state and I agree on. First, Rule 24035G contains an explicit deadline for filing an amended motion. And we agree that if an attorney misses that deadline, a presumption of abandonment has occurred. We also agree that no explicit deadline for filing a statement in lieu is contained anywhere in Rule 24035. Now, the state takes this information and argues that without this explicit deadline, there must be no deadline for filing a statement in lieu. This line of thinking, though, leads to the following example. Let's say it's the 61st day and appointed counsel has not filed anything with the court. I believe the state's theory as to how we should view this situation can best be described as a Schrodinger's abandonment. Now, in this scenario, at the same time...
It's not abandonment at that point in time. There's just a presumption of abandonment.
Yeah, so Schrodinger's presumption of abandonment. Yes, Your Honor. So in this scenario, at the same time, the attorney has both presumed to abandon the client by not filing an amended motion and has also not abandoned the client if the attorney later chooses to file the statement in lieu. And this takes place at the same time, so the abandonment turns on a later action taken by appointed counsel. I believe this is absurd, and Rule 24035 should not be read in such a way. Instead, if the 61st day occurs with no action taken, appointed counsel has abandoned the movement.
Well, I think Judge Powell's point is that suppose you're right, there's a presumption of abandonment on the 61st day, we have a hearing on abandonment, and counsel then says under oath what he would have said, or what he would, in this case, did say in the late statement in lieu, and the judge says, well, then you haven't abandoned him, and that's the finding, and now we go on the original pro se motion. Why go through that process when you can have him say what his testimony would have been in a statement in lieu that's filed, albeit after the 60th day?
Well, I believe an abandonment hearing needs to be held there because I think the chances that the attorney is telling the truth is actually pretty low in that scenario.
But what if the litigant agrees? It's like, yeah, my lawyer came to talk to me, and we agreed there's really nothing else to claim that isn't already in my pro se motion. And I want my hearing on my pro se motion. And the trial court says, giddy up, let's go.
In that scenario, maybe that is okay. I'm not sure, but I don't believe that's what we have here. Here we have an expectation. The litigant expected the counsel to file an amended motion, and that was not done here.
But does it have to be a hearing? Can't the court then just say in his judgment, there's no abandonment? There may have been a presumption of abandonment, but that presumption has now been overcome because clearly counsel has not abandoned his client.
Well, that did not occur here.
Fair enough.
I mean, instead, the motion court actually accepted the pro se amended motion and held an evidentiary hearing based on that.
Doesn't the rule require written action by appointed counsel?
It does.
So that the rule doesn't contemplate the counsel can later report what they should have put in a written letter.
No, Rule 24035E explicitly states what counsel has to state in writing. It's specific.
And the letter is relieves the counsel of filing the amended motion within the 60 days.
Yes, Your Honor.
So that if the counsel doesn't file the letter, then there is the obligation to have filed the motion within 60 days.
I believe so.
That it's not an after the fact, you can excuse not filing it. It's if you don't tell us you're not going to file one, it has to be filed within 60 days.
Yes, Your Honor. And in fact, if you read 24035E, you'll see that the attorney is supposed to read all of the record, determine whether an amended motion needs to be filed. If they determine one does not need to be filed, it says what to do with the statement in lieu. And then it says, and if you look at 24035G, it says the amended motion is due within 60 days. So if you're looking at the order of things, the attorney first has to decide statement in lieu or amended motion, and then it's after that they write the amended motion. So if an attorney has made that determination within the 60 days, then there's no reason that they wouldn't file that statement in lieu within the 60 days.
Let me ask you about that then. Let's assume that I'm a public defender and I've got five clients in the same building, Department of Corrections, and I go and I meet with them, and they all have relatively the same deadline. So I meet with all five of them in time to file amended motions on behalf of all of them. I find that four of them, I should file an amended motion, but there's one that I should file a statement in lieu of. Read the rule, and so I get to work, and I get my four amended motions filed, and I save the one, the in lieu of, for last, because it doesn't seem to have a deadline in the rule. Wouldn't that be a way to prioritize it in compliance with the rule?
Except a statement in lieu takes about 5 minutes to write.
Right.
If you have actually done the work and actually determined a statement in lieu is not necessary, this is not a burdensome activity. You do not write a statement of facts as you would in an amended motion. You do not write the actual claims and the facts that you will use to present those claims. So it is not a cumbersome action to write a statement in lieu.
But is it just a form filing?
It is not a form filing. You have to say what you did, but
right.
it's very
in compliance,
simple.
And the rule tells you what to do.
Yes, it's never more than one or two pages, and most of that is just basic information.
But the research and the preparation to be able to say what you want to say in a statement in lieu would take potentially a considerable amount of time.
Yes, it hopefully should.
And but it also has to be completed to allow you to make a decision whether you're going to do the statement in lieu of or whether you're going to file an amended motion.
Yes,
so
it
has
yes.
to be that preparation has to have occurred so that you have time to comply with the rule.
Yes, it does.
And the reason I was kind of following up on Judge Powell's question, his question suggests that you could have done everything you were supposed to do and file the statement in lieu of late, that at most that would create a presumption. But if you later demonstrated you had these five cases and you got everything done except for this one and you filed your statement in lieu of afterwards, but it demonstrates that you did meet with them, that you made this conscious decision, you just didn't file that one beforehand, would that rebut the presumption of abandonment? Because you'd done everything the rule required?
Well, but did you do it by the 60th day?
The evidence is. I did all this before the 60th day. I just filed my statement in lieu of afterwards because I thought I should file the amended motions first because they clearly have a deadline.
I'm not sure. I can say that didn't happen in this case.
Well, it kind of did in the sense that the statement in lieu of was filed and the statement that was late, or I don't like calling it late because it was filed. It was filed after 60 days.
Mm-hmm.
And in that statement that the counsel says, hey, I talked to my client and he's got this concern about this drug issue, about whether or not it's cocaine base or cocaine salt. I've looked into this. There's nothing there. It is not a viable claim. Now, his client disagreed with him, but he's got an obligation, counsel has an obligation not to pursue a frivolous action. So he's actually not, it sounds like to me, has not abandoned his client. Now, we may have to presume that because he didn't take any action within 60 days, but hasn't this been rebutted in some fashion at that point in time?
Well, and to be clear, what the statement in lieu that was actually filed in this case, the attorney was either wrong or it's a different claim. So the statutes dealing with drug trafficking have been amended, and it used to be a very big difference between the amounts of weight needed for drug base and cocaine base and cocaine salt. Cocaine base is typically what we think of as crack cocaine. Cocaine salt is more typical cocaine, and it has been changed where the amounts are closer together now. But at the time of this, that's actually not what Mr. Latham was worried about here and was presented at the evidentiary hearing. It's that the lab report showed that Mr. Latham had cocaine salt, and he did not have enough of it to enter the Class A felony of trafficking.
But that's a different issue.
Well, no,
ineffective for not figuring this out, but he at least looked into the issue that his client wanted him to look into, and he's reporting in the statement of facts that he doesn't believe there's a viable claim there.
Well, and I think it's a different claim, though. I think it's an entirely different nature. So I don't know if it just goes to ineffectiveness. It's that I don't know that he looked into the claim his client wanted him to. I think it's more this was his own idea, and it didn't pan out.
Before time is gone, there's two things I wanted to ask about. One is, I presume you both know, but I wonder how this affects the argument that effective January 1, 24.035 and 29.15 has been amended and now specifically will require a statement in lieu to be filed within 60 days, and how that would affect it. And the second thing is, regardless, assuming there was no deadline previously until this change was, you had a second argument, which is that he gets to file a reply and his amended pro se motion is in effect. His response to counsel saying, you don't have a claim, and he's saying, yeah, I do, and whether or not there's presumed abandonment, whether or not there's a deadline, if he gets to file that reply, don't you get your arguments in? And isn't that what happened here? The trial court treated it as an amended, considered the reply on the merits?
So as to your first question, and I'll try to answer these very briefly, but as to your first question, I think it just shows what an injustice it was to Mr. Latham that his attorney did not file this within the deadline, but it's also not treated as an abandonment on the Southern District's part. Whereas future litigants in this same scenario, it will be treated as abandonment. And as far as the 10-day reply, the 10-day reply is in the new version of 24035, and to my awareness, it has not been interpreted before. I believe the purpose of presenting the statement in lieu to the client before it's filed and giving the client a 10-day chance to reply, I think the only rational basis for that is so that the client can either convince counsel, no, you need to file an amended motion, or for the client to file their own. Because a client can file a motion for abandonment surely at any time. So the reply should not just be to allow the client to say that the attorney has abandoned me. Client can also communicate with counsel at any time. You don't need a rule to say that. So I think the only proper reading is to allow the client to either file their own amended motion or to convince the attorney to file one. Thank you.
May it please the court. The effect of the 2018 amendments, it makes the issue on the timeliness of an amended statement in lieu of an amended motion moot, I guess, because Pinnell and Mason, the courts that said there is no time limits for filing a statement in lieu of amended motion, will essentially be abrogated by the change in the rule. Now, like Mr. Latham here, there's probably a few cases in the pipeline that will be operating under the pre-January 1, 2018 rule change. I don't know how many of those would actually have statements in lieu of amended motions. I would assume few. But so the court's resolution of this case would have an effect on that. What would not be, or what would actually still be a live issue after January 1st, 2018, is whether the failure to timely file an statement in lieu of amended motion constitutes a presumption of abandonment requiring a remand and an abandonment inquiry. What we have in this case, there's the concept that claims can be refuted by the record. Post-conviction claims can be refuted by the record without the need for an evidentiary hearing. The same, I would think, should be true with respect to statements in lieu when those statements in lieu actually show, even though they weren't timely filed, they show that the attorney performed all the functions required under the rule. And in this case, the statement in lieu shows that at least some of those activities were performed before the deadline, the original 60-day deadline. And the statement in lieu, that's on page 50 of the legal file, counsel attests that he interviewed Mr. Latham by phone on May 21st, which preceded the due date for the amended motion by about a week, or for the statement in lieu of to be filed for about a week.
But you don't show someone didn't abandon them by showing just they happened to talk to them during the interim period. I mean, normally, if you don't file anything, it's abandonment.
Right.
So, in effect, you're saying someone who did abandon their counsel, planned to file an amended motion, and missed the deadline could get out from under by simply filing the statement in lieu after the deadline's ended, and suddenly they haven't abandoned, and they don't have to worry about sanctions. And it seems to me it's a really bad public policy to suggest a filing of late statement in lieu is not a presumption of abandonment, because it invites counsel who has missed their deadline to file one as cover for their failure.
See what you're saying, Your Honor. And what the state's position would be, it could be a presumption of abandonment. The untimely filing could create a presumption of abandonment, but it's refuted by the record.
It could be just like anything else, sure. I mean,
right.
I thought you were saying there is no presumption from a late filing, at least once there's a deadline that requires a filing by a certain point. And that seems to me it invites inappropriate conduct by defense counsel.
Well, and there would be still the avenue of, I guess, sanctions. I don't know if that's too strong a word, but they would still have a late filing. It would still not be, they had violated the rule in the sense that the filing was late.
Right.
But is there, and I guess you could say.
Well, if you're not arguing there's no presumption from a late filing, which of course could be overcome, then never mind. I thought you were saying there was no presumption.
I thought you said there was no late filing because there was no deadline.
Going forward, well, I'm talking.
Going forward, oh, after 20, me. Yeah.
But going back to the rule that we have now, if there's no deadline for a statement in lieu, then theoretically, couldn't the movement file the statement in lieu months, years later?
Theoretically, and in fact, Mr. Latham cited a case where that happened over a year later than. That's not ideal, and that's not.
Our rule gives 10 days to reply, though. If there's no deadline for one, why there couldn't be a deadline for the other? Because you get 10 days to reply.
Right.
Yeah. And so why didn't that happen here? Is that okay? I mean, why can't we consider what he said in his reply?
Because the state's position on the reply is a reply to the statement in lieu being a reply to what counsel states in the statement in lieu of what they did, how they investigated.
It doesn't say that, does it? I mean, you're replying to the statement in lieu. Why wouldn't part of a permissible reply be, you're wrong. It says I got nothing else to allege, and I do. I don't see where you get the limit you're talking about from our rule.
Only from the fact that when a court appoints counsel to file, to investigate the filing of an amended motion, and counsel, trained legal counsel, decides no amended motion is necessary and files a statement in lieu, that it seems rather incongruous to say that then the defendant can pro se file an amended
motion. Well, one might argue it seems silly to make someone file a pro se motion to begin with rather than just having appointed counsel file one. But that's what our rule requires, and then it says this pro se person can file a reply. So why would one be able to raise substantive issues and the other not?
Well, all I'm saying is the state's position is the reply goes to, did counsel perform the duties?
But where do you get that from? I don't see that in the rule, I'm saying.
Well, just trying to construe something that doesn't have a complete...
Right. Assume for sake of argument that there isn't a deadline for the statement in lieu of...
That there is not?
There isn't. Assume there isn't, because the rule doesn't say one. But there clearly is a deadline for the reply.
Right.
It has to be filed within 10 days. What's the harm in considering that reply as a pro se amended motion?
Right.
That way the movement gets all of his claims, even the ones his lawyer doesn't think he has. What's the harm in that?
Well, I can't think of a harm or why that would be, other than depending on the...
It would still be an enforcement of the time.
It's
because it enforces his time. If you disagree with your lawyer, you have 10 days to disagree.
The only potential harm that you could see on something like that would be if there is no need to file an amended motion, counsel decides and files a late statement in lieu. Well, nothing's really lost. The whole idea behind cases like...
But under subsection D, doesn't subsection D say that if the litigant files a pro se motion and doesn't list all of his claims, that he waives those claims in a future setting? So the only way the court could potentially consider an additional claim in the amended motion brought by the litigant would be if, based off a conversation the litigant had with his counsel, saying, oh, I didn't realize that claim was there, and there after my discussion and the investigation of my counsel, now I realize I've got this new claim. Do you see where I'm going with that? Isn't essentially under our rule the way it reads now, isn't the litigant pretty much tied to what he or she claims in his initial motion?
They have to certify in that motion. It is all the claims of which the pro se defendant is aware.
Right.
So the concept of a pro se amended motion is troubling in that regard.
Well, and there's a case out of the Southern District, Johnson, where the state essentially argued that there could be no amendment to the pro se motion, and the court, the Southern District, disagreed with that and said that you can amend your pro se motion as many times as you want to up until the deadline for filing the amended motion. What the problem you run into if you construe a reply to the statement in lieu as being something beyond telling the court, hey, counsel did not do their duty under Rule 24035G or E, that then you run the time limits out. In cases like Doris, these time limits are strict. We do not want these cases floundering about because evidence...
Of course, now we require the statement in lieu to be in 60 days, so...
And that's exactly right, Your Honor.
And that avoids these problems because
right.
We have deadlines.
But on a situation where you do have a statement in lieu that's untimely filed, allowing the defendant to pro se file an amended motion in addition to a reply or as in lieu of a reply would seem to go against the policy of strictly enforcing the time limits and getting these cases heard in a timely manner.
If we're looking at the reply, Judge Fisher asked what would be wrong with considering a reply to be an amended motion. If that's not done, what's the purpose of the reply?
The purpose of the reply is for the defendant to tell the court that my counsel did not do what he or she claimed to have done in the statement in lieu of an amended motion.
But if counsel isn't required to do that within the 60 days, because we don't allow there to be abandonment because counsel didn't do what they were supposed to do. So the reply really would just be a futile act, wouldn't it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
If the defendant movement files a reply and said my counsel didn't do what they were supposed to do, that doesn't get them anywhere, does it? If it's not considered to be an amended motion, simply complaining about them. You can't have ineffective assistance of counsel. We've said they've got the deadlines or don't have a deadline for in lieu. Even if the movement's right, there isn't anything that can happen, is there?
No, there something could happen under
what?
Under Lulip and Sanders, that the appointed counsel has specific duties that he or she has to perform. If they have not performed those duties, that is considered abandonment, and counsel could be, for instance, if no amended motion or no statement in lieu of is filed, and the deadlines have
You're
all passed.
You're saying if a bad statement in lieu is filed, that's also abandonment? It's just like no statement is? If one, it's just filed without any research or so? Because
well,
otherwise, there's no point to it, as Judge Brecker
said. Not a bad statement in lieu, but an inquiry by the court in response to a reply by the movement, which demonstrates that counsel did not actually perform the duties that they attest to
You're
in the statement
that
of
would
lieu.
Be abandonment?
Well, that I think under Lulip or Sanders, whichever case says that they didn't take the action or they didn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then the remedy is you allow the late amended motion to be considered timely and you proceed.
But there is no late amended motion where it's a statement in lieu is the point. So what's the remedy if you lie in your statement in lieu?
Well, I would suppose the remedy would be.
Well, I guess in that case they let them have a new counsel with new amended motion.
I would think
they did in the Lulef.
Right. They just appoint new counsel if counsel has not fulfilled
right.
the duties.
Well, let's take this case. It's, suppose we were to say on the 60th day, if no amended motion or statement in lieu is filed, there's a presumption of abandonment. Seems like a reasonable position. Everything that's filed thereafter is just evidence on whether that presumption has been rebutted. You have the statement in lieu that was, if not late, then at least after the 60-day deadline. And you have whatever it is that the defendant files. And couldn't the judge look at that and decide that the presumption of abandonment has not been rebutted? He was abandoned, and therefore we're going to consider the amended motion timely. Could the judge do that?
The defendant's pro se amended motion?
Right. The only amended motion we have.
Only if the court interprets the reply to include the filing of a pro se amended motion.
Well, and if we do, could the court have reached the conclusion that the record in front of him did not rebut the presumption of abandonment, and therefore abandonment as a fact is found?
Right. Well, in this particular case, the records, I think, clearly show there was no abandonment, even though the statement in lieu of was filed after 60 days.
Except that we're presumed that the judge found the facts in accordance with the judgment, and the judgment addresses the late filed amended motion.
So he must have found abandonment, or he wouldn't have considered the late filed amended motion.
We've seen enough of these cases to know that that's not necessarily.
Well, we presume, though, that.
It can be presumed, but there's nothing on the record that shows that the court presumed there was abandonment and considered the delay.
There's proof that he considered the amended motion, yeah.
Unless we rely on a presumption that.
He considered the matters raised in it, so he had to consider it.
Right. We know the court did consider it. We don't know that the court considered it because it found that the defendant had been abandoned.
So when it goes against the defendant, we always presume the trial judge considered everything in the motion court when defendant raises claims and says things weren't considered. Wouldn't it work both ways?
Well, and I think that argument was made in Moore, and yet the court remanded for an abandonment inquiry, even though all the claims had been considered, because there had been no specific finding in Moore that the court made an abandonment inquiry from the late filing of the amended motion in that particular case. So, I think the state's position would be because all the claims have been covered in the court's judgment, there's no need for a remand for an abandonment inquiry on that ground, and on the ground that the records in this case show that the counsel fulfilled the duties under the rule by making an investigation and filing a statement in lieu of amended motion, even though it was late, the presumption that the defendant might have been abandoned was rebutted. Unless the court has any other questions. Thank you.
Counsel, I assume you're not, it's not your position that this should be remanded for explicit finding on abandonment.
Well, I actually do not believe that an official finding has occurred based on my reading of Moore.
But by rule, we're required to presume that all of the facts were found in accordance with the judgment.
All right. So I agree with that. And if this court wants to do that, I'm perfectly happy with that. Well, I believe an abandonment has taken place, so I'm perfectly happy.
I'm at a lower, more practical level.
Yes.
He doesn't think that this ought to go back for a finding of abandonment. Do you think that that's necessary, or should we pursue the policy that what we want to encourage are resolution of these motions on the merits, and that's what occurred here?
Except, I believe if abandonment occurred by the late filing of the statement in lieu, the proper remedy is for new counsel to be appointed. Right now,
Where we're going. Where is that supported in the case law? That when you have a late filed amended motion, regardless of who authored it, where is the support for the idea that you get a new lawyer and a new amended motion?
Well, give me one second.
Well, if it's a statement in lieu and there's no reply or anything, that Luleff clearly says you get a new counsel who files a new amended motion.
That is
motion.
True.
But if we treat the reply as a pro se amended motion, then we're in new territory, aren't we?
Except the reply is filed pro se.
Yeah.
And a movement is entitled to have an amended motion filed with the assistance of counsel.
Yes. And as respondent points out, this pro se amended motion is not perfectly written. And I think counsel would have written it perfectly. So I think he's entitled to counsel if he has been abandoned. And this is different than the late filing of an amended motion. Maybe you can treat that and accept that without appointing new counsel. But accepting a statement in lieu, you're not getting the assistance of counsel. Now, as for whether...
We're through the looking glass here. This was an amended motion. We're pretending it was a reply because that's the legal argument. But he didn't think it was a reply. He thought it was an amended motion.
Absolutely correct.
Okay. So.
But he's doing this because he's been abandoned by counsel. So in some sense, I think Mr. Latham was desperate and filed what he had to file to get these issues in front of the court. I don't think he should have had to have done that. I think when counsel...
But he did get them in front of the court, and they were tried and found against him.
And that is true.
And so what would new counsel get him that he has not already received?
Counsel would get him a better written amended motion.
And how do we know that it would have succeeded any better than this one did?
We don't know.
Or perhaps a new amended motion with additional claims.
That is true. Because if...
Or maybe the counsel's thoughts on this were correct, but it wasn't a viable claim.
Well, except I think if you read the merits portion of my brief, you will see that that is not true. So that Mr. Latham is correct that he possessed cocaine salt, and it was not enough for the Class A felony of trafficking.
But shouldn't the trial court be the one determining that?
The trial court didn't disagree with that. The motion court did not disagree with that. They overruled the pro se amended motion for different reasons that I've argued in my brief were also clearly erroneous.
And part of those arguments were that, well, but because the state might have filed additional charges, you know, he might not have had a good remedy.
And that is, yes, that is true. And I think the fact that he was still willing to vacate his guilty plea, knowing those new charges were coming if the motion court did so, that shows the judge was clearly erroneous and he would not have pleaded guilty at the time the guilty plea took place.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.